Hey everybody, my name is Kurt and I'm a compulsive eater. And thank you, Hannah, for asking me to speak. It's so humbling to speak in front of a group of people that grew up with Roseanne. And I just want to ask my higher power to help guide me, say something that might help everyone who's listening today. I'm on a spiritual path. That's really the bottom line of my recovery today. I have so much I want to say. First of all, I'll qualify for just a minute. My top weight was over 300 pounds. I was totally and completely disabled by my disease of compulsive eating. I was hopeless, and I was 33 years clean and sober in other 12-step programs. So like they say, the credits do not transfer. I have a disease of great proportion that I underestimated. And I wish I had wandered into the room of Overeaters Anonymous back in the early 60s when I was just beginning my addiction. But I wasn't ready at that time, but I'm ready today, and thank God I'm here, and thank you for joining me. I was 55 years old, and in the year 2015, at about 240 pounds, I had already lost about 60 pounds through a pay and way. I found my way into OA, and I was still doing a lot of research, and They talk about that in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, every alcoholic who ever wrote a story tried to drink in moderation. And I did that with food. I certainly did not want to admit there were some things that that I could not eat in moderation. I was fully, wholeheartedly addicted to not only these food-like substances, let's call them. It certainly wasn't in the organic produce aisle at the store that I got into trouble. And I don't want to name specific things, but I have never seen a child throw a temper tantrum because, you know, they want something from the butcher or the produce or fruit and vegetable aisle. And typically, that is like one of the very first red flags in my story. In the early 1970s, I was 12 years old. I was diagnosed as a type 1 juvenile diabetic, and I almost died. And they got me to the hospital, and they put me on insulin, and they said, "You poor kid. You know, this disease will probably rob you of your life." So I was pretty hopeless starting off really young. I did start sneaking and lying about everything I was eating. I would do it undercover. I would take a dollar. Back then at Dark Drug in Maryland, if any of you have time on the East Coast, they would sell 10 for a dollar. And I would buy 10 of those things and just shove them all in before I got home because I didn't want to get busted. But that was the nature of my disease. It was always lying and secrets and shame. And it was killing me from a young age. So fast forward, I came into OA in 2015. I lost 150 pounds. I met my partner. I moved to Sacramento. I retired from my job. I bought a new house, sold a house. In all that stress, I was just not abstinent. And I gained 100 pounds. It was shocking and devastating and humiliating. But here's the beautiful thing. It brought me to my knees, and I surrendered to the fact that I did not want to die from this disease, and what I was binging on was not worth giving up my life over. It was that painful realization that everything I thought I knew about what was dear and precious to me was a lie, in terms of my alcoholic food and my disease. So in 2018, in Sacramento, I met my sponsor. Some of you know him. He gave me this little tiny thing. It's like a blue topaz gem. And he said, "This represents your abstinence." He said, "Hang on to it. It is the most precious thing you have." And, you know, if I was going to a party, if I was going to a casino or a buffet somewhere, he said, "You wouldn't leave this sitting around where someone might take it, would you? It's beautiful. Look at that." And he said, "Protect your abstinence. Do what you can to survive this disease. And it's much, much easier to stay abstinent than to get abstinent." And speaking in terms of addiction, I know that my body, speaking for myself, was very addicted to those food-like substances that I watched in TV commercials from the early 1960s. You know, good kids were rewarded with this. You know, these had a little prize inside. Get a box of these. Processed, refined foods, and I won't mention them by name, but they were food-like substances that are not part of my food plan today. What an exciting miracle this has been. And I love nutrition. I love the way I feel when I feed myself well. And following a food plan is the only way I can do that consistently. So in December of last year, I celebrated 4 years of abstinence. In the beginning, In the beginning, I said no recreational sweets was my abstinence. Anything else was okay. And that has slowly evolved into more and more disciplined, self-discipline, really. But I started doing what other people did. My sponsor doesn't eat past 7, and his sponsor doesn't eat past 4:30 in the afternoon. And she's originally from Texas. But I think, wow, to go from 4:30 afternoon all the way to breakfast the next day was almost like a punishment. In fact, when I was a kid, I was punished by going to bed without dinner. And now, being hungry when I go to bed is the greatest gift I can give myself. Being hungry between breakfast and lunch, being hungry between lunch and dinner, is one of the greatest things I can do for myself. And for me, that was all a new behavior, a new thought. The lies that I believed was that I should constantly be eating to avoid being hungry. And here it is, hunger now is one of the greatest things I can do for myself. I've been at a healthy body weight now for 2 years. And I stepped on the scale this morning, and I always cringe, you know, when I look down at that number, and I'm right smack where I need to be for 2 years. And my life was a roller coaster like this, gaining weight, losing weight, gaining weight, losing weight. I was never stable, never. And it's nothing short of a miracle. It is a miracle, really. The fact that I've been living with type 1 juvenile diabetes since 1972 is a miracle. And the fact that I'm alive today, I'm a member of several 12-step programs. I jokingly say I speak 7 languages, Al-Anon, AA, NA, CODA, ACA, SLAA, and OA. And, you know, I'll focus on OA, but believe me, it took a lot of recovery to get me to this point. I will have 41 years of clean and sober sobriety in May. And, but if my sponsor said, Well, you have to reset your sobriety date because you binged on food that whole time. You know, my disease is like that. I'll look for any possible way to use substances as a crutch. And it doesn't matter if it's caffeine or anything else. I have to be real careful. So experience strength and hope. That's the message I want to talk about tonight. My experience, here's my journal. I started this when I first came into recovery, and it goes back to 1981. And I have journals, piles and piles of journals. And I wrote about compulsive eating, about addictive food behaviors, about starving myself, about losing the weight and looking good, and then gaining all the weight back. You'd think I would have gotten a clue before now, you know? I'm amazed at how blind I was at some time. But you know, my journals are kind of personal. I don't really read them enough. And now my writing and my journaling starts first thing in the morning. When I wake up, I actually thank God for another day of life, because that is a gift. Then I ask God to help relieve me of my difficulties. Please take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those that I would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. It's all about a higher power, really. And if I ask for help, it is so that I can be of service. I no longer pray for a Nintendo 64 or a Mercedes-Benz or a new flat screen color TV like Janis Joplin used to ask for. You know, these things are very simple requests. And for me, my higher power is not Santa Claus. You know, I ask for the things that help me help others. And, you know, as long as what I'm asking for might be of help to you, it always comes true. Always. And to be clear, I live a life blessed beyond my wildest dreams. I never dreamt I would be alive to be 63 years old and talking to a group of people who knew Roseanne. I mean, that some of you built this program, you know, in other 12-step programs. 12-step recovery has saved my life. I love that anonymous quote that says, I came into recovery to save my ass and found it was attached to my soul. And I love that so much, because that's pretty much where I am today in terms of my recovery. Losing the weight is part of the physical aspect of my journey, but giving me a purpose to wake up tomorrow and to be here, this is where service is so beautiful. And there's always opportunities to do service, right? Whether you're sponsoring someone or you have a sponsor, that's a service. I used to be the key keeper of the church and or the meeting location. And I'd go in and I'd get there early and I'd put up the signs and I'd put the chairs out. I was a literature person, so I put all the pamphlets and books and set it up so that it was beautiful. And I'd make a little plug for literature. Huge part of my recovery today, the tools, you know, the literature of this program. So service for me, you know, when we are asked to share at a meeting, it is one of the greatest gifts ever, because I get to look at my life. It's like, you know, that proverbial mother-in-law coming to visit with the white glove, checking to see if there's any dust on there. And that's how I look at my program, because I can't give away what I don't have. So if I'm going to get up here and talk about recovery and how beautiful life is today for me, and you know, that's open to interpretation. Not every day is great. And, you know, there's more to life than happiness. You know, I'm in a class right now about aging and about this final chapter of my life, whether it's 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, who knows? But we don't really talk about the end of life in our culture. We don't talk about grief in our culture. We don't talk about anger or sadness that much. At least we never did growing up. But, you know, be happy, be happy, be happy. There's far more to life than just being happy. And so my experience and program has helped me to get in touch with my feelings at the end of the day when I do my 11th step. For example, I'm going to call myself to the carpet here. I'm a Region 2 rep, and I'm the chair of the Public Information, Public Outreach Committee for Region 2. And that's all of California, parts of Northern Nevada, Hawaii, and all of Mexico. So here we are in San Francisco. This was just a week ago. I get up with a microphone, and unexpectedly, I have to introduce someone, and I don't have a script, and I'm trying to be funny, and I make a joke. That's never a good thing for me. Joking around always gets me into trouble. That night before I went to bed, I had this sort of sneaking suspicion that I had offended somebody. And the next day, this was last Saturday. On Sunday, I spent the whole day writing an amends. I said, this is my part in it. I don't know that I offended anyone, but I needed to clean that mess up. And that's what this program has taught me, to look at my behavior, the things I say and do. I want to be helpful to people. I do not want to hurt people's feelings. One thing I learned about myself growing up, I was a gay, fat Catholic kid in Montana, and I got picked on a lot. I was always the butt of the joke, and I learned that if I beat everyone to the chase and made a joke about myself, you know, calling myself fat or whatever, I was already humiliated, and they would leave me alone. So that self deprecating humor sort of got me through awkward and potentially harmful situations, but it no longer serves me today. It no longer serves me to talk about myself as if I don't care and love myself. And if I do that, then I talk about you as if I don't care and love you. And so basically that's what my amends was. And that was such a gift to be able to call myself out on a mistake I made. And I told my sponsor about it. I'm gonna cry. My sponsor said, the big book says, and when we are wrong, promptly admitted it. Not if we are wrong. Because I am oftentimes wrong. And when that happens, that's when I promptly admit it. So I just love the fact that this program gets me through my own embarrassing situations. And it's okay to be imperfect. It's okay to admit I was wrong. That was something we never did growing up. Somebody in a meeting said, it was easier to lie than to tell the truth. And that is so profoundly true in my case. I remember lying about the simplest things as a kid because of the environment that I grew up in. And I can't blame my family for that, but it was sort of a survival technique that does not suit me today. You know, when I step on the scale, there's a measure of honesty that is apparent. And if that number is off one way or the other, then I know I'm not being 100% accountable or honest about following my food plan. Everything I thought I knew about program, you know, that set aside prayer, everything I think I know about God, myself, and others, everything I think I know about my own recovery, please help me set that aside so that I may have an open mind and a new experience with all of these things. Please help me see the truth. And the truth is really what it's all about today for me. So many things in my head I thought were true, were false. And when my beliefs were built, it was watching TV in the 1960s. So I had to go way back and sort of do some reprogramming. I'm sure there will be people who know about computer languages. And, you know, I have to sort of reformat my hard drive and reevaluate the things that I thought were true. Hunger is a very important feeling to experience to get to a healthy body weight, since I was 150 pounds overweight. Junk, that's not food, that's junk. Food is not a substitute for love. These are all just things that came to me through meetings, through other people's shares. Food is not a relationship. I was lonely. I went to bed at night and I was tossing and turning. Instead of a companion or someone to love me, I brought food into bed. Bed is not a good place to be eating food for me. That's a behavior I had to stop. Food is not a recreational activity. Food is not entertainment. Food is not God. You know that story about the person who called her sponsor and said, I'm going to buy this thing and I'm going to go home and eat it. And the sponsor says, okay, but before you do, I want you to set that on a pedestal and bow down to it because that is your higher power. And you know, I'll never forget that. That always struck me about what a higher power really is and about the purpose of food, right? I am allergic or highly sensitive to some junky things, so I need to avoid them. Simple truth. My toxic alcoholic substances are not my food. I need protection from these things because I have nearly destroyed my body. And as I get older, you know, living with diabetes my whole life, well, my whole adult life. And then there's all the other bouquet of chronic health illnesses. And, you know, the longer I live, the more I will have to deal with. And it's just a simple fact of life, unless, you know, my higher power decides it's my time, and that may be any minute, who knows? I hope to be here tomorrow. But that said, I want to take the best possible care of myself today. There's lots of great information out there, lots of scientists and doctors that are doing the research about nutrition and your own biology. How to feed yourself is a really important challenge moving forward. I want to take the best possible care of myself today. And if I had a dog or a cat and they started pulling their fur out and I took them to the vet and the vet said, oh, they have an allergy to this crap you're feeding them, I would immediately stop feeding them that and I would start feeding them well. But would I do that for myself? So positive thoughts and affirmations are a big part of my life today. I love this little tool, the telephone, and I put reminders up there. Spiritual intention for April 2nd Meditation hourly. What now, God? I love being healthy. And it goes on and on and on. But I do several different hourly messages to myself. I remember in one of the weight loss programs I was in, the instructor asked us to write a letter to ourselves. And she said, why are you here today? And what do you want to see happen? What do you want to get out of this experience? And she collected all the letters. And then when I hit my goal weight, or after, you know, 6 months, I get a letter from myself in the mail. It was pretty cool. And I opened it up and read it. And it reminded me, I want to survive. I want to live. I don't want to suffer. I don't want to be debilitated by this disease. I want my life back. That's what I said. When I was 300 pounds, I didn't leave my room. My roommate would go to these junk places, get all this stuff and bring it and leave it at my doorstep. And, you know, God bless him. He's a codependent like anybody. But, you know, at the same time, you know, I didn't realize that I was like ending my life. I was really at the end. And I asked God, I swear, I asked God to help me. I got down on my hands and knees and I asked God to help me find a way or take me. Those were my very words. And the next thing I know, I'm hitting meetings and I'm working with others. I'm doing service and getting in touch with the reasons why I was eating, getting in touch with how to take better care of myself. It's amazing. The body has this ability to fix and heal itself. And I always took that for granted, you know, as a young person. But as I get older, you know, I cut my finger, it's already healed. That's pretty miraculous. But it's not always going to be that way. Eventually, this little device I live in will end. It's just a simple part of life. But until that happens, I want to take the best possible care of myself as I can. Getting in touch with my feelings. I had to go in for a colonoscopy and I had fasted for 3 days because of Crohn's disease and other complications. I couldn't eat for 3 days. It was really hard to fast for 3 days. But when I got there, I was in a good mood. I went into the exam room. They gave me the twilight sedation. And they stood around watching me, and I'm watching them. And they're talking to me. And finally, they said, sorry, you're not relaxed enough, so we can't do the colonoscopy. And then I lost my wallet on the way home. So I get home, my phone rings. I found out that the night before, my cousin had died of a fentanyl overdose. Sweet little thing. She was in a program. She died. I lost my wallet. I hadn't eaten for 3 days. I was so distraught. I couldn't really talk. I couldn't really identify what was going on. And the next day, I couldn't get out of bed. And yeah. My partner said, what's wrong with you? And I really didn't know what to say. It was so strange to have this building up inside of me. But I was angry. I felt let down. There's this wonderful little, it's called the emotions wheel. Someone at a meeting in LA shared it. But it talks about the top 6 or 7 emotions: angry, fearful, bad, surprised, happy, sad, disgusted. Yeah, I felt a lot of those. But then it breaks it down. I felt let down. I felt humiliated. I felt bitter. I was mad. I felt aggressive. I wrote a very unkind letter to my doctor, which I didn't send. Thank you. Higher power for discretion. But, you know, getting down into the deep feelings that we actually use food to cover up, was so remarkably helpful for me. And I wrote about it. I made phone calls. I talked to people about it. I complained about it. I processed through it, and I did not eat over it. And this for me is remarkable. And I'm relatively a baby in this program, but I've been in the rooms of recovery long enough to know that this program works. Getting in touch with what's going on in my heart and reaching out to the dearest people in the world, which is all of you. The OA Yodas, I heard someone say that. I love that expression. And, you know, there's people in this room that know more about me than my own family does. But being able to pick up the phone, and this is why, you know, 3 phone calls a day may seem excessive to a newcomer. But when I talk to Nancy B for hours and hours, or I talk to Ron, or I talk to Joe, or I talk to maybe Mark, or Hannah, you know, anybody in this room that I call or that calls me helps me process through the minutiae of life and the things that I eat over. It's really important to start those conversations. Repetition is the most important aspect of my life today, without question. The structure of service and of OA recovery. I used to think it was almost like a handicap to be in a routine. I wanted spontaneity and fun. I didn't want to do my meals and, you know, is this my life in a box? But today, doing this over and over and over ensures that I get good at it. You know, asking God again for direction regularly, asking God for helping me with my challenges. What were my difficulties coming in? Oh my gosh, we don't have enough time to talk about what my difficulties were. I was so disorganized. I was so, I was 11 years old or 12 when I was diagnosed with diabetes. And that 12-year-old ran my life. That 12-year-old wanted to do what that 12-year-old wanted to do, but not anymore. With love and compassion, I tell that 12-year-old, sit down and eat your vegetables. I'm not quite sure how I'm doing on time, but I'm sure you'll give me a heads up. I got 10 minutes, great. So ultimately, the promises come true. They have come true for me. Fear was my biggest offender on my 4-step. The things that I procrastinated and left not doing were the things I was afraid or didn't quite know how to start. Service has really taught me a lot about discipline. I have a attention deficit issue, and I got a timer that I can use to help me focus for little bits of time. That's a gift of the program. I heard someone else say they did that. I mean, these little answers, I mean, the scale, weighing and measuring food, all of these little tools and techniques were something very, very new and very strange to me when I first came into program. I remember going to my nutritionist's office in the beginning. The dietitians and the nutritionists tried to teach me how to eat. And boy, I had learned some really bad behaviors. I would eat cereal out of a big salad bowl. And nobody needs that many carbs, ever. But I remember seeing this little rubber pile. It kind of looked like a doorstop, or I couldn't take my eyes off it. Finally, I said, well, can I ask you what that is right there, that little rubber, you know, food that they show you? And she said, that's a serving of rice. And I was blown away, because I had never seen such a small little spoonful of rice in my entire life. You know, you go to a Chinese restaurant and they bring you this huge plate. It's actually like 12 servings of rice, and that's part of your lunch for that day. Yeah. No wonder I weighed 300 pounds. That's how I learned the behaviors that got me there. So I get up in the morning, I do my affirmations. You know, I remember someone saying, oh, OA, they just brainwash you. 12-step programs, they brainwash you. And boy, I tell you, my mind was pretty dirty and it needed a good washing. So I had to come into this program and forget what I thought I knew about everything and start listening to learn how to talk to myself, how to feed myself, how to think. The affirmations that I say every day go off on my phone. If I hear someone say something that is like spot on where I am today, I'll put it as a reminder on my phone to go off every day. And until I got it, I'll keep reaffirming it. These are positive things that I learned to do that are very much like a prayer, very much like a prayer. And prayers are great too. I came into OA with a lot of God baggage, and my sponsor led a spiritual retreat, and he used to laugh at me. My religious abuse, growing up a gay Catholic, you know, that kind of speaks for itself. But on the retreat, he gave each of us a little crucifix. And my sponsor died in 2017, and I still carry this around. And I use it to say my prayers on. And I'm going to close with this, because this is really about where I am today. But I was really angry at God. And Frank used to say to me, Kurt, God is not a Catholic. And I never heard anyone say that before. It just cracked me up. And you know, laughter is so important, right? But now I walk around, I'll say my prayers from my childhood, but I also, there's a lot of beads on here. I have never really counted them, but I'll start with asking all of the people who have gone before me into their home going. And I'll say to them, please walk with me today, like my mom, who was very organized. I would say, Mom, please walk with me today. Please help me with the virtue of organization. You know, Roseanne, please help me with the virtue of perseverance. People who have influenced me in my life are part of my prayers as I do my spiritual walk. And I want to keep them near and dear to me because their spirits are here. I believe that wholeheartedly. And, you know, someday I will be nothing more than a spirit in these rooms. But call upon the strength of my spirit, and I will help you if I can, of course. Who knows what it's like on the other side? But for today, I just so am so grateful. Thank you all for participating, for listening. And again, I'll keep my information in the chat. And if I said anything, if anybody has any questions, I love to talk. And if your sponsor says make three program calls a day, please do, and make me one of them, because we'll never get off the phone. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kurt. That was wonderful. Thank you. Thank you.